Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Toodly-doo.
All right. One of my favorite things about having Brian on the show is whatever greeting I get is always going to be completely random, and it's super awesome. So our first topic today is we're going to talk about Apple getting into the publishing business in a slightly different way than we've seen already. And Dave, I want to start with you as a person who publishes things and sure. See what's your stance on this.
Well, you know, we don't know anything from Apple yet, right? Like, I think that's the first,
correct.
The first thing to say. But we do know that there's been lots of talk, and now even more talk, with potentially an event and even a date set where Apple's going to announce this thing that is a Netflix for news type service. Mm-hmm. The idea is, again, nothing's been announced from Apple, but the idea and the general consensus and all of that is it'll be $10 a month and you get access to all of this news content in Apple's, presumably in the news app or whatever, however they want to deliver that. And it all feels very much like the evolution of their acquisition of Texture, which mm-hmm. was announced in whatever, it's South by Southwest last year.
Yeah.
While they were at South by Southwest, it was announced in Cupertino because that's how Apple does things. But lest we misunderstand that. But, you know, so on the surface, this sounds like a great thing, right? You know, subscription service, aggregating lots of content together, good for consumers in general, right? I mean, obviously, there have been examples that are bad, but, you know, people seem to like that. That's good. Where it gets, and it's also good for publishers, right? Because it's an avenue to get your stuff into people's hands. You know, once someone is paying that $10 a month, you know, they are likely to use that channel to consume things. So if you can get your stuff into that channel, that's, you know, potentially more people that will see your content. And Apple is going to split this revenue with the publishers that are being seen there.
And you're saying split, great. What we're talking about is 50-50 from what we've heard.
I was getting there. Yeah, right. I mean, it's a revenue share model, again, as people are predicting, but Apple has said nothing. But that's pretty typical, you know, with Apple News as it stands now. You can put your own ads into it using Apple's engine to display them. And if they're your own ads, you keep 100% of the revenue, whatever you worked out with the app. Advertiser, you get to keep. You don't pay Apple to use the service. If you choose to have Apple sell their own ads into your content and display those there, they also do a split. It's a revenue share and it's 70-30. You get 70, Apple gets 30.
Like the App Store, like iTunes, like iBooks.
Correct. And with this news thing, the rumors, and there's plenty of reports, so it's probably, whether it's the final answer.
There's fire to the smoke.
There's fire to the smoke. And as you said, Kelly, yeah, people are saying it's a 50-50 deal. And lots of people are upset about that. The people that are especially upset are the ones that already have their own subscription engines going, right? Like the Wall Street Journal, where they keep 100% of the revenue that people send to the Wall Street Journal to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. And you can sign up and log in the news app to see that content there. Mm-hmm. So this would be, it certainly would potentially compete with that for some people, right? And mm-hmm. But it depends on what of the Wall Street Journal's content is included in this Apple News thing, right? Is it 100% of it? Is it only some of it?
The front page, for example, and not like anything in depth further back or anything like that.
Yeah. Is it the stuff that they basically give away for free if you sort of know how to Google search for a Wall Street Journal article? Because sometimes you can get things that you don't have to pay for. But I mean, we have a subscription here, so we get to see it all. But, you know, they like where in terms of the paywall does this content fall? And maybe that's part of the negotiation. It's like, ah, you want to only give us 50%? Cool. And it's
then
it's
you get 50% of our content. Right, easy peasy. You get,
right. Yeah, exactly. So I get why people are up in arms about this, sort of. I get why people are concerned about this. I don't get why people are, you know.
Well, by people, I mean publishers.
Publishers. Yeah.
Yeah, right. People aren't, people couldn't care less so far.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. The people don't know anything, but the publishers are cranky about it. And part of the reason why they're cranky about it, I think, is because Apple has always taken 30%. And if you remember, that 30% was once seen as highway robbery.
In certain circles, it's still seen as highway robbery.
So what when we talked about this before the show, Dave, you mentioned that a big part of whether or not 50% is reasonable is what is Apple doing for that 50%?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you, when I saw that 50% number, where my head went immediately was that 50% number was because Apple wants to grow services revenue rather than because of what they're going to offer.
Well, but if they don't offer enough, then publishers won't do it, right? I mean, it's a very simple thing. It's very much unlike the App Store, where it literally is the only game in town. If you want to sell an app that is used by people that have iPhones, you must go through the App Store. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts about this. That is not the case with news. We prove that every day. We're doing it right now. You know, this is not gate kept by Apple, this particular content. And so we can keep it that way. If the deal doesn't offer enough upside for us or for any other publisher, we just say no thanks. It's that simple. So
right. Like, and of course we TMO would be thrilled to be part of this paid service.
I think so. I mean, we want to see what they offer, but you know, because we don't do anything paywalled, getting paid, I mean, we get paid for our content because the price to view it at TMO is that you have to look at the ads that we choose to show you or choose to tell you, as Kelly is about to do here.
Technically, right. They only have to let us show the ads.
Right.
They don't actually have to look at them.
No, correct. They have to let us show them to them. That's right. And the same with the, you know, the audio ad that Kelly's about to do here and when this segment's over. And that's fine, right? Like that's the price for this particular content.
Right.
I'm assuming in this Apple News, whatever subscription Netflix thing you want to call it, there may or may not be advertisements in there. And perhaps that's an interesting thing. Like, what if Apple takes 50% of the revenue from the subscription service, but also allows you to place your advertisements in there? Well, okay. So like, that's the price to view it there. And again, if that net to us as a publisher is something we see as a win, like, oh, it's more eyeballs, you know, they're not taking money out of our pockets when we do the math. Certainly some people will read our content there that would have otherwise read it here, but what's the percentage versus the people that would only ever have seen it there and didn't know about Mac Observer before that, even though we've been around 20 years and where have you been? But you know, like that sort of thing, right? Like what are they bringing to the table? And if they're bringing lots more people to the table, then
it's not,
that's great.
It's not just what they're bringing to the table. It's what they're taking away from the table. So for one thing, I think from an affluent standpoint, it's safe to say that when it comes to tech users, that existing customers for in the United States, at the very least, for a lot of these premium publications are probably going to be disproportionately Apple users. So what are they potentially giving up there? I don't have any data to back that up. That's just that's just a gut feeling. Secondly, one of the things they are definitely giving up is access to that subscriber. And that access to subscriber is worth quite a bit to publishers. Publishers were selling access to us long before Google and Facebook came along.
True. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that was a big part of the publishing revenue thing. So they're giving that up too. They're also giving up the direct ability to themselves, even if they don't want to sell access to us, to directly contact us. Mm-hmm. Right. Because
these are all potential things. Like, some publishers don't have a mailing list. Some publishers don't have a way for users to log in. They just publish their stuff.
Right.
And so to them, yeah,
but those are the ones who aren't likely to be cranky about this.
That's what I'm saying. No, that's exactly what I'm saying is there's lots of publishers that there is nothing taken away. This is only accretive, right? Like the extra eyeballs, extra money. Awesome.
Right. Right. The people that are being reported as being upset are the big publishers that do have, as you said, their own subscription engines.
Right. Right. Right.
And the Washington Post has very specifically under Bezos done a whole lot. Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post, has done a whole lot towards like completely revamping and rebuilding how the Washington Post actually makes money. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that Jeff Bezos has been involved in. He's not involved in the content or editorial side of the publishing of the Washington Post.
And this is an evolution along those exact same lines, right? Like this idea of aggregating a subscription service is that evolution. Will it be, mm-hmm. you know, a piece of that evolution that wins and sticks around, or is it something that's a flash in the pan and goes away? The answer is maybe.
Right? Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I would readily pay that, by the way.
Same. Yeah. I don't see this as a negative thing. And, you know, is the 50-50 number right, or will the market, you know, demand something different? Well, you know, that's probably why this controlled leak is happening right now, so that, you know, we're getting sentiment before Apple has to put a stake in the ground on this.
Mm-hmm. Publicly, I wonder if it's a controlled leak from Apple.
I think it is.
The publishers who are BuzzFeed. Yeah, for the BuzzFeed thing could be a controlled leak. And by a controlled leak, we're talking, of course, about John Martellaro first pinned that, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. Talking about how Apple deliberately leaks some information in order, you know, for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this one could be controlled, but in a different sense. Like, you know, you're dealing with a bunch of publishers here. This news is going to get out if you talk to enough of them, right?
Right.
And so let's make sure everybody knows on the surface that this is confidential. And let's not worry too much about that internally here at Apple. And let's hope somebody, you know, winds up floating this news somewhere to a friend somewhere else, and you know, now it's out. So I have no doubt that Apple anticipated and perhaps even desired that this conversation would be happening ahead of this announcement, assuming it's all true. Like, but to your point, Brian, and I agree with you, you know, this there is fire to this particular smoke.
And I think the thing that is interesting about it to me is rolling this out to consumers, partly because, like, music is something people do for enjoyment. And, you know, like, if we talk about Apple Music as an all-you-can-eat sort of a situation where somebody pays Apple every month for access. And Netflix is the same sort of thing, but for movies. And so having it be something that isn't necessarily entertainment, like, news is like vegetables to the dessert of the other things that I'm just mentioned. So I'm curious how that's going to work for some people. And I know another thing John Martellaro said earlier this morning was that he has a few different subscriptions now, and if he could roll all of that into one place where he just hands somebody money, you know, one place every month, and that one place has all of his stuff, then that sounds pretty great. And I think a lot of people would probably feel that way if they are subscribed to multiple new services now, or have considered, like, I pay for X and I'd really like to pay for Y, but, you know, different billing dates and all kinds of stuff, and makes that kind of a hassle. So it would be nice to see if anything interesting comes out of this. So I'm definitely watching very closely. I'm sure you guys are too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's interesting. It is a necessary evolution, whether the minutia of this one mm-hmm. is exactly right. Well, I'm certain it's not exactly right. Like that's it. That's for sure. Like there's no way that the first time out of the gate, something like this is just going to be perfect. So it's going to be, right. it's going to be tweaked a little, right? You know, right. if this is one of the points that's tweaked or not. You know, in the end, I was going to say, who cares? I know exactly who cares. And I might be one of those people, right? But but I don't know that I'm one of those people yet.
Yeah, 50% still doesn't sit right. I don't think there's anything Apple could do to justify the 50%.
Well, certainly that's not true. That's hyperbolic, right?
That is absolutely hyperbolic, but it's also a truthful statement from me.
Okay.
I do not see what Apple could do to justify 50%.
And whether
you're not looking big enough, right? I mean, there's plenty they could do. If they could increase our exposure and revenue tenfold, and they said, but you know, in order to do it, we got to take 50%, and we're doing it up front and also
that's true for us. Okay, I was actually thinking more from the standpoint of traditional.
If the numbers are the same, then okay, yeah, we're on.
Yeah.
Sure, that sounds great. You're going to get more because here's the thing, this might. And I say might, there's a lot of mites about this conversation might be about nothing. This might be the thing that gets someone who was never paid for a content subscription in their life to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then 50% of that mm-hmm. definitely goes to the person who figures out how to make that happen.
Sure. I can get behind
all day
that.
Long.
Yeah. I can totally
all
see
day
it.
Long.
Yeah,
and that might be exactly what this does.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be, and whatever it turns out to be, if it turns out to be anything at all, then we will absolutely talk about it here. But in the meantime, as Dave totally told you earlier, I'm going to read a sponsor. I'm going to read an ad from a sponsor. And today our sponsor is ExpressVPN. With all the news lately about online security breaches, it's hard not to worry about where your data goes. Apparently even if you're subscribing to a magazine, you have to worry about what happens to the information that you're giving out to all these other places. And aside from that, you could be tracked online by social media sites or marketing companies or even your mobile provider or your ISP, and they could be tracking all of that information in order to take that data and sell it to somebody else. And there's a lot of ways that other people are able to profit off of your information. One of the things that you can do to make that slightly more complicated is to use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is a VPN service, and it has easy-to-use apps that run easily in the background on all of your devices. So whatever screen it is you've got, it installs on your iPad, on your iPhone, on your Mac, whatever Mac you may have. All of that. It's one click on, one click off. It's super duper easy to use, and it vanishes away. Like as soon as you're done with it, you don't even notice that it's still running. But what it's doing while it's running is securing your data, and it's making sure that everything is anonymous by encrypting all of that data and hiding your IP address. It's less than $7 a month. And because I like you, you can get 3 months free just for being a TDO listener. So if you go buy a 1-year package, you get 3 months free. If you go to expressvpn.com/TDO, that's expressvpn.com/TDO, and you can learn more there and get those 3 free months. Now, what I want to talk to both of you about now, part of the reason both of you are on the show today, is this new watch strap from Sony. Now, Brian, this was a thing that you came across, right?
Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
Charlotte actually wrote this one up. Is that true?
Yeah, it's either Charlotte or Andrew, I think. But I think you're right.
Yeah.
It was Charlotte. Yeah.
Here's why I was super interested in it. Longtime listeners of this show and of ACM and longtime readers of TMO know that I love my mechanical watch.
A lot.
And they also know that I don't wear it because I wear my Apple Watch because I'm addicted to the data collection and notifications. Mm-hmm. Here's the deal. The only threat at this point to my Apple Watch is a smart strap that will feed data to Apple Health, HealthKit.
Okay.
Right? I can live without Apple Pay, which is a thing I definitely use my Apple Watch for. Mm-hmm. But I would wear my mechanical watch a lot more if I could continue collecting data.
Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to derail us here, but would you wear your Apple Watch a lot more if you had a Fitbit type device that you could also wear?
My mechanical watch?
Would you wear your mechanical watch more? Even full time, if you could collect your health data with some other device that was convenient and comfortable and perhaps even stylish to wear alongside your mechanical watch.
I'd probably wear my mechanical watch out, and I'd probably continue to wear my Apple Watch because I do love notifications on my Apple Watch.
Interesting. Okay.
It keeps my face out of my iPhone, which is one of the things that Apple was going for in the first place.
Sure. Okay. Right? I was just asking a question, trying to frame this here. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. And another interesting aspect of this is one reason why I wanted to talk with Dave about this today, is that so Charlotte's headline was it's a Sony smartwatch strap that costs as much as an Apple Watch, wired. And it's a link that she did to a Wired piece that was also focusing. It's like, you know, my goodness, this thing costs as much as an Apple Watch. And it seems like a huge mistake. In the world of high-end mechanical watches, $400 or £400, either one, is not a lot of money for a good watch strap.
Right. Yeah. People are looking at this. Apple Watch owners or Apple Watch target market people are, I think, the ones that are looking at the price and saying, this is ridiculous. And for those people, that is 100% true.
Right.
And for those people that have spent, you know, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 on a watch or pounds, it doesn't matter, on a mechanical watch, $400 or $1,000 to have the strap that works well, but it's not $1,000. It's either 349 pounds or 399 pounds. And we'll talk about the differences there in a minute. It is not a lot. So for that target market, this makes perfect sense.
Thank you for framing that because I'm like, wait, what? That's, yeah. I think, more than I paid for my Apple Watch, the whole thing. Including right. the watch and the band and everything.
Right. It's just not for you. That's not a judgment thing. It's an interpretation thing, right? It's just like, yeah, don't worry about it. Like, you would never spend that kind of money on it. Right. They knew that already.
Right.
And they're okay with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. Yes. They are okay with that.
Yeah.
Okay. The weird part is that this is coming from Sony. So, that's the thing. Honestly, I think that's the biggest hurdle that exists here to get this into the realm of acceptance by mechanical watch aficionados, wearers, okay, let's say the word snobs, right? Because Sony is not someone that makes something for those people.
Right.
Until today. And that's a weird thing. That's not a weird thing. It makes perfect sense why they did this. But yeah.
We could put it differently. That one's made by Sony.
Right. Right. Yeah. You gotta put your nose a little higher in the air when you issue that particular condemnation. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, bonus points if you can say it while you've got your jaw clenched shut.
Right. No, here in New England, we're very good at that. Yeah.
Right.
But Sony is also selling what they call watch heads in this line. The name of the line is also curious to me. It's WENA, which I assume is pronounced just like Bowling for Soup pronounces it in their song, My Weena. I'm assuming this is Weena. Their song is about a dog, unless you actually read the lyrics, and then it's perhaps about something else.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Dave.
Good. That's perfect. So in this Weena line, you have two straps. There's the 399 pound pro strap that only has three functions to it. Then, yes, you need to follow along here. Notifications, step counting, and contactless payment. I don't know that it supports Apple Pay. No one has said that, so I don't think it
there's
would.
No
I
way. Imagine. There's no way it can.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But like anything else, Sony's going to like go pioneer their own service so that you can only use their watch band in order to use this payment service.
Unless they're doing, you know, Android Pay with it or whatever. But then there is the slightly less pricey active strap that is £349. And that takes those three features and adds to them a heart rate monitor, a GPS, and I think maybe that's it. It's so that's the one that most people, I think, like for you, Brian, I think that's the one you would probably want, assuming it fits your design aesthetic of your regular watch. And then they have, I think, 10 different watch heads that you can plug, you know, that you can connect to these straps with various different design aesthetics and features and all of that good stuff, somewhere between another £100 and £400. I think that's there just to sort of close the loop, as it were. I think to your point, Brian, earlier, this is something that people are going to connect to their, you know, Tag Heuer, their Rolex, or their, you know, something along those lines. So, to me, it's interesting. I have an Apple Watch. I still have my Series Zero that I got on release day. I also have a variety of mechanical watches, some that cost far less than anything we're talking about here, and some that cost more. And I like them all for different reasons. Mm-hmm. I've always been a fan of mechanical watches for a variety of reasons. And one of them is that it's really kind of cool to have this piece of machinery on your wrist that's like super complex, but entirely non-battery driven. So it's cool to have some advanced technology. And I realize we could argue advanced, but it is pretty advanced technology, a precision piece of technology on your wrist that doesn't need to be charged, you know, that you can either wind or winds itself. So I like that. And I'm not obsessed with tracking my steps or health data or anything like that. So I wear my Apple Watch. It's probably the watch that I wear more frequently than any other. It might be 2 or 3 days a week that I wear my Apple Watch, and the rest of the time I'll wear something else. And that works out fine for me, you know. So mm-hmm. We're all wired differently. Yeah. And so would I get one of these, like would one of these straps be something that would appeal to me? I don't think so. I really don't like all the notifications on my Apple Watch, to be perfectly honest. I find them terribly distracting. So no. Like, it's handy around the house, so I don't have to have my phone in my pocket or on my person, you know. But other than that, traveling, I really like my Apple Watch, you know. So maybe one of these. Sure. Maybe. Yeah.
I think the last watch I bought that wasn't from Apple was from Swatch. And now I'm sure both of you are going to disown me for that.
And Swatch came out with that. Oh, I can't think of the Constellation, but it's not the Constellation. Their mechanical line a couple of years ago, and there are three of them in my house right now. My wife, my son, and me, and each own one. And I wear that's one of the watches I wear most frequently. Is that System 5 is the name of the
I've long wanted one of the Swatch automatics.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's an automatic watch.
Yeah.
System 50. Sorry, not System 5. System 51. Because that's how many parts there are in it. The battery on that. A full wind on that will last like 3 days. Oh, which is crazy.
They do an automatic too.
Wow.
It is an automatic. That's what I'm saying. A full, but you can wind it if you choose. And I'm saying when it's full, if you wind it all the way up, it will last 3 days. But it is an automatic watch. Yeah, it will wind itself if you want it to. Yeah, yeah. They're great watches, and they're only about $100.
Not known to be very accurate.
Well, no mechanical watch is known to be very accurate.
Yeah, but it's known to be less accurate than, say, a more expensive mechanical watch.
I wouldn't. My experience would not agree with that. We have three of them.
It's only based on reading reviews, not using.
Yeah, them. No, they've been very like they're the same as anything else. It's like, yeah, you know, it keeps time. It's close enough. That's it. Like, they're all close enough. Like, if you get a Swiss watch that's certified by the Swiss agency that does all that and tests every movement and all that stuff, I think the parameters for passing are, Brian, you can correct me on this, but I believe it's plus 5 per seconds per day, or anywhere between plus 5 and negative 3 seconds per day. That's considered like certified as a Swiss chronometer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but there's the chronometer, and then there's non-chronometers too.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. But like, the best you could get is, you know, this 8 second slush.
Right. Or orders of magnitude less accurate than a $10 quartz watch.
Oh, a $10 quartz watch will be, as long as the battery is strong, will be perfectly accurate. Yeah, yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
So if accuracy is your thing, then don't get a mechanical watch.
Yeah, right. People don't buy mechanical watches for the accuracy. They do pay more for more accurate ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, they pay more different for ones that are certified to be accurate versus ones that are not certified. Well,
and there are some that are a lot more accurate than others.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And they cost more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, 400 pounds, not a whole lot for a strap for the mechanical watch crowd. It's not like I think actually Sony would probably have a harder time selling this if it was cheaper.
Right. That's probably true. Yeah.
I can see that.
We don't know that they will be able to sell it.
Right. Right.
But they would have a harder time selling if it was cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, long story even shorter, keep an eye on Mac Observer for the new podcast Watch Talk with Dave and Brian.
I already own Watch Geek Gab. What else do we need?
See? I told you it was coming. See? All right. Well, thanks for coming by here and talking about watches today. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Yep, thanks for having us.
And
much appreciated.
Dave, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, my pleasure. Fun stuff.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.